ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। We'll read a verse from Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 2, text 71. Vihaya kaman yasarvan umam charati nispraha nirmamo nirahankara sa shanti madigacchati. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. A person who has given up all desires for sense gratification, who lives free from desires, who has given up all sense of proprietorship and is devoid of false ego, he alone can attain real peace. To become desireless means not to desire anything for sense gratification. In other words, desire for becoming Krishna conscious is actually desirelessness. To understand one's actual position as the eternal servitor of Krishna without falsely claiming this material body to be oneself and without falsely claiming proprietorship over anything in the world is the perfect stage of Krishna consciousness. One who is situated in this perfect stage knows that because Krishna is the proprietor of everything, everything must be used for satisfaction of Krishna. Arjuna did not want to fight for his own sense satisfaction, but when he became fully Krishna conscious, he fought because Krishna wanted him to fight. For himself, there was no desire to fight, but for Krishna, the same Arjuna fought to his best ability. Real desirelessness is desire for the satisfaction of Krishna, not an artificial attempt to abolish desires. The living entity cannot be desireless or senseless, but he does have to change the quality of desires. A materially desireless person certainly knows that everything belongs to Krishna, Isha Vasyam Idam Sarvam, and therefore he does not falsely claim proprietorship or anything. This transcendental knowledge is based on self-realization, namely knowing perfectly well that every living entity is an eternal part and parcel of Krishna in spiritual identity, and that the eternal position of the living entity is therefore never on the level of Krishna or greater than him. This understanding of Krishna consciousness is the basic principle of real peace. Hare Krishna. At the very outset, I would like to welcome everyone to our Sunday feast program. So, we have had two lectures in this series. The first lecture was by His Grace Radha Gopinath Prabhu, who spoke on Krishna, the greatest social reformer. And last Sunday, we had a class by His Grace Vrajavihari Prabhu, who spoke on From Philosophy to Love. So today's topic, which has been given to me, is Krishna, the peacemaker. And I will make a feeble attempt to speak on this particular topic. Now, we just now understood who can be the real attainer of peace from the verse that we just now read. So there have been different views about peace and how to attain peace. There was this Washington. He said that one should be always in a state of preparedness for war to preserve peace. Then there has been a novel, War and Peace, by Leo Tolstoy, famous bookseller, one of the most prominent authors. And day before yesterday, that is 6th August, that was the atom bomb day, the day on which Hiroshima and Nagasaki were bombed during war, and they caused such utter devastation that the scars still remain. I remember when I had gone to Japan way back some years ago, and I happened to be there on that day, that the Japanese mourn for the dead as if the event occurred only yesterday. So that scar is still there in their mind. And every year on 6th August in Hiroshima, particularly in the Hiroshima Park, they have a peace memorial for those who died, and especially to console some of the relatives who are still living. So war and peace, so contradictory, but they are a part and parcel of our current day modern life, isn't it? So everyone wants peace. We want peace in the house. We want peace of mind. We want peace in the office. We want peace in the country. In fact, we want peace in the universe. The most favorite prayer, Vedic prayer, is Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Everybody wants peace. Who doesn't want peace? Everybody wants peace. But we do not know what peace is. And the Lord himself tells us how to attain that peace in the verse that we just now read. Now, had there been peace in this world, then the divorce courts would not have flourished. The lawyers who fight, you know, divorce cases, they're really flourishing because there is no peace between husband and wife. So in the civil courts, you know, there are fights between mother and son, father and son, brothers over property and so many other matters. So where is peace? Peace has become conspicuous by its absence in our current day society. So in the modern society, basically, it's completely tension-ridden, and there is need for peacemakers, but pacemakers have become more popular. Why? Because practically every third person, you know, has some heart problem, and they make pacemakers, and even they are not very perfect. Because I know of a person in our building who had a pacemaker, you know, placed in his heart after surgery. And pretty soon, you know, his heart really started malfunctioning and he had to leave his body. So even the pacemakers are not perfect. What to speak of, you know, so-called peacemakers in this material world. But the Supreme Lord Krishna is the perfect peacemaker. He also, you know, keeps our heart fluttering. So, he, you know, in one sense, you know, he provides the pacemaker also. If we are not to do it, we would be outside, you know, we would be quitting this world. So this is how it is. We find that soldiers are always on red alert to preserve peace on the border. So peace is very, very difficult to come by, very difficult entity to get. So yesterday, I think last Sunday, His Grace Braj Bihari Prabhu made a very nice presentation in which he said that beyond peace, there is love of God. Beyond peace, there is love of God. And that is a true symptom of happiness. Yena atma suprasidati. But Krishna, elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita, in a very beautiful work, says, Nasti buddhi ayuktasya, nacha ayuktasya bhavana, nacha abhavayata shanti, ashantasya kutasukam. So Krishna is saying that one who is not connected with the Supreme in Krishna consciousness, for him, there is neither transcendental intelligence nor steady mind. And without which there is no possibility of peace. So if the intelligence is clouded and the mind is not steady, where is the question of peace? There is no peace whatsoever. And how can there be happiness without peace? Ashantasya kuta sukham. So it means that peace is very much a requirement to be happy. In fact, Prabhupada writes a very strong purport to the verse that I have just read. He says that unless one is in Krishna consciousness, there is no possibility of peace. And one who is engaged without relationship with Krishna is certainly always in distress and is without peace. And then he says something very beautiful. Krishna consciousness is a self-manifested peaceful condition which can be achieved only in relationship with Krishna. Now we find that Duryodhan, he was always in distress and anxiety. He had 11 Akshayoni, you know, army of soldiers. He had the support of Bhishma Pitamaha, Dronacharya, Krupacharya, Karna, Ashwatthama, and so many brave, you know, generals and soldiers. But was he ever in peace? Never. He was always in anxiety. Why? Because his consciousness was not connected or related to Krishna. On the other hand, the Pandavas, they were always completely dependent on Krishna. They're forever thinking of Krishna. And therefore, in all, through all their problems, they were, in one sense, very, very peaceful. In fact, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Kshipram bhavanti dharmatma shashvat shantim nigachyati kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. So one who takes the shelter of Krishna, very quickly he becomes righteous. He becomes righteous and he attains lasting peace. Shashwat Shanti, not Ashashwata. Shashwat. He attains that. So then Krishna says, O son of Kunti, declare boldly that one who takes shelter of me never perishes. So this is an assurance which Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita to all of us, which is very, very reassuring. It is not that only on the battle of Kurukshetra that Krishna assisted or helped the Pandavas. In fact, Krishna helped the Pandavas in so many other stressful situations, and he acted as a peacemaker. We'll come to the actual pastimes a little later. So he acted as a peacemaker. So which divine qualities does Krishna manifest, or which qualities does a peacemaker need to have to function properly? These are important questions that need to be asked. So how many divine qualities does Krishna have? Lord Brahma has an answer. He says, Gunatmana pite gunan vimatum itavatirnasya ke ishire asya kalena yeva vimita sukalpe bhupamshavakhe mika dyubhasaha. Lord Brahma, in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in his prayers, he says that in time, learned philosophers, scientists, they may be able to count the number of atoms. They may be able to keep a count about the number of snow particles. They may even be able to keep a count of what we scientists call as photons. You know, whatever is there in the, whatever light falls, whatever particles are there, even that they may be able to count. But nobody can count the qualities which the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, has. Nobody can presume that, you know, he can ever keep account of Krishna's quality. It is simply inconceivable. Srila Rupa Goswami, in Nectar of Devotion, he describes 64 qualities of Krishna. And according to my own standard of intelligence, which is very low, I have chosen some 5 qualities or some 7-8 qualities from the Nectar of Devotion which Krishna used in the peacemaking, you know, efforts. So we'll briefly discuss them and then go over to actual pastimes. So Krishna is actually Bhakta Suhrut. We know the famous shloka. Surudam sarva bhutanam, bhuktaram yadne tapasam, sarva loka maheshwaram, surudam sarva bhutana. So Krishna is not just surud, he is bhakta surud. What does bhakta surud mean? It means that the devotees are always in Krishna's heart. The devotees are always there in his heart, and he is always in theirs. And Krishna is easily pleased, so easily pleased by the devotees. Patram pushpam palam toyam. The Lord is very easily pleased. He just sees your bhava. So that's the first quality. Then Krishna is sarvajna. Sarvajna means all cognizant. Krishna actually is the rightful holder of the title of sarvajna. There are many people, we call them know-all, you know. He boasts of, I know this, I know that, I know this, I know that. There are so many people you come across in this material world. But in the truest sense of the word, Krishna is sarvajna. Now this also comes across in the verse in the Bhagavad Gita. What is that? Vedaham samatitani vartamanani cha Arjuna bhavishyani cha bhutani nam tu vedana kaschana. He says that I am the knower of the past, I am the knower of the present, and I am also the knower of what is going to come in future. So doesn't Krishna have all the advantages to be a peacemaker? Some of us may make feeble attempts to be peacemakers. We may even use nice arguments, we may quote Shastra. But unfortunately, we don't know what is going to happen, what is the result. Krishna knows everything. Vartamanani, bhavishyani, everything. And therefore, he is in a very wonderful position to be a peacemaker. Krishna is Priyamvada. He is a pleasing talker, one who talks pleasantly even to offenders. Even to an offender, Krishna talks very pleasantly. So in Nectar of Devotion, there is a statement So when Kaliya was subdued by Krishna, completely vanquished, at that time Krishna says to Kaliya, "My dear Kaliya, king of snakes, although I have given you so much pain, please do not be dissatisfied with me." Now, where is the need for the Supreme Lord Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, to say this to Kaliya, whom, you know, he has danced over him and completely, you know, converted him, you know, into practically nothing. But he still speaks very sweetly to him. So this is a wonderful quality to have in life, speaking sweetly, and very, very useful, especially when we try to broker peace between two warring or quarreling people. Then Krishna is Vavaduk, very fluent in speaking meaningful words with all politeness and qualities. Some of us may speak meaningful words, but politeness is missing. So it doesn't mean that you are able to speak meaningful words and therefore you can negotiate peace. You also require, you know, politeness, and you require so many other qualities. So Krishna displays that quality. In fact, Uddhava, who is so close to the Supreme Lord Krishna, that he says that words of Krishna are so attractive that they can immediately change the heart of even his opponents. We see it happening in the pastime that we'll be discussing. So even the opponent's hearts can change. So Krishna's words can immediately solve all the questions and problems of the world. It's crystal clear. Bhagavad Gita, which was spoken 5,000 years ago on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, even to this day, it can sort out the problems of all mortals like us. If we just, refer it and read it seriously and try to understand what the Bhagavad Gita is trying to convey 5,000 years later. And in thousands of years yet to come, Bhagavad Gita is still going to be, the words of Bhagavad Gita are still going to be potent and helpful to humanity. So this is Krishna. Then Krishna is Sudhruda Vrata. He determines, he's totally determined, and he upholds his vows and his acts to fulfill his promises. He'll go to any length, stretch himself to any length to fulfill his promises and to protect his dear devotees. So his love for his devotees, Bhakta Suruta, that quality is foremost in anything that Krishna does, including as a peacemaker. So that is the foremost quality. So then, Deshakala Supatradnya, he's an expert judge of time, place, and circumstances. So Krishna skillfully weighs everything before he says something, before he acts, and whatever he does, whatever he speaks, whatever he acts, it is perfect. It is perfect for everyone's benefit. Now this is something which we cannot ever claim. So sometimes, we speak without thinking, sometimes act without thinking, and generally, we create disaster instead of peace. So Krishna is different. Krishna is gentle, he is Dakshina. Krishna acts, he acts and speaks with others in such a way that they become peaceful and satisfied. Now, if after peace negotiations are established, both the persons are, are dissatisfied, then the purpose is not served. But whatever the Lord does, he does it so beautifully that, people are, satisfied. And he is liberal, Vinay, most magnanimous, liberal in dealing with others. This liberality can be seen in the way he treated Putana, one who came to poison him. But he saw that he had that wonderful quality of her wanting to be a mother, though with a vile motive of, poisoning him. And he gave her the role of a nurse in the spiritual world. So this is Krishna. So some of these qualities are going to come to the forefront while we discuss the pastimes. So today we are going to discuss three pastimes of Krishna as a peacemaker, in which some of the qualities that I have just now mentioned will become very prominent. So the first one is, I'm going to present them in the chronological order. The first one is kidnapping of Subhadra, Subhadra Haran. The second one is ensuring peace between Yudhishthir and Arjun. Yeah? And the third one is ensuring peace between Bhima and Draupadi. Now, these are all wonderful devotees of the Lord, and yet they are placed in a situation where there is some conflict of ideas, where they cross each other. So in these situations, which had the potential to become explosive, how did Krishna help? So this will become somewhat clear in the narration that I'll be now making. Now the very first pastime is Subhadra Haran. Now this episode entitled Arjuna Kidnaps Subhadra is there in the Mahabharata, and it is also there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srila Sukadeva Goswami, in the 86th chapter of 10th canto, speaks about kidnapping of Subhadra. So if it's an important subject for Sukadeva Goswami, it should be important for us also. Very, very important. So that particular episode begins with Maharaj Parikshit asking Srila Sukadeva Goswami a question. He says, Brahman veditum icchama swasaram rama krishnayo yatha upaye me vijayaha yamama asit pitamahi. So Parikshit Maharaj is asking Srila Sukadeva Goswami, he's saying, O Brahmana, we would like to learn how Arjun married Lord Balram and Shri Krishna's sister Subhadra. Now Parikshit Maharaj wants to know how his grandmother married his grandfather. Now sometimes children come home and they go through the album and they see, you know, old photographs. They're very curious to know who is this, who is that. Sometimes, of course, an innocent child also asks, so that means you are married. Anyway, so that is how it is. So this way, Parikshit Maharaj is wanting to know, how did Arjun marry Subhadra? That is the subject matter of that particular chapter. So Srila Sukadeva Goswami, he replies, Arjuna Tirtha Yatrayam Paryatan Avanim Prabhu Gataha Prabhasam Ashrunot Matuleyam Sa Atmanaha Duryodhanaya Ramaha Tam Dasyati Itinacha Pare Tatlipsuhu Sayati Bhutva Tridandi Dvarakam Agataha. So Sukadeva Goswami is not irritated by the question asked by Parikshit Maharaj. He is not saying that you have just 7 days to die. Now why do you want to know all these details? why don't you focus? No. He's very compassionate and very lovingly narrates the pastime. Why? Because the pastime deals with glorification of Krishna. So anything that is connected with Krishna is glorious. So Sukadeva Goswami in great patience is telling him that while traveling far and wide, visiting holy places of pilgrimage, Arjun came to Prabhas, and there he heard that Lord Balaram intended to give his cousin Subhadra in marriage to Duryodhan. That no one else approved of the plan. Arjun wanted to marry her himself, so he disguised himself as a renunciant, complete with triple staff, and went to Dwarka. So this is the translation given by in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now the question may arise that why did Arjun undertake a pilgrimage in the first place? And why did he disguise himself as a renunciant in Dwarka? Very strong reasons. We'll talk about that presently. So when Yudhishthira Maharaj was ruling Indraprastha, it became a very, very prosperous kingdom. So prosperous that Yudhishthira Maharaj performed a Rajasuya Yajna. Very, very prosperous. So at that point in time, because of the virtuous qualities of Dharmaraj, of Yudhishthira Maharaj, he became famous all over the world as Dharmaraj, protector of virtue, the defender of virtue. So at that point in time, there was an agreement between the Pandavas and the five brothers and Draupadi that each of the brothers will live with Draupadi at a particular, you know, time predecided. And no one else will intrude on the privacy. This was the agreement. That is, a particular, if a Yudhishthir is staying with Draupadi at a particular time, no other person, no other brother would even enter into that room. So this was the understanding. And anyone who breaks this rule had to go to the forest for 1 year. So this was, as they say, unwritten law and understanding among the brothers. So it so happened that one day, as Draupadi was in the chamber of Yudhishthir Maharaj, a Brahmana came to the palace of Yudhishthir Maharaj, and he was furious, was very angry, because his cows had been stolen away. And he came there and he started screaming at Yudhishthir Maharaj. He said that there doesn't seem to be any virtue in your kingdom, because, you know, my cows have been stolen. No, I don't know how many such complaints are lodged with the chief minister today. But anyway, this complaint was lodged. And Yudhishthira Maharaj could not attend to this particular complaint. He was in privacy. So at that time, Arjuna heard this. And Arjuna felt the need to redress the problem. Otherwise, there would be a slur on the name of Dharmaraj. So not really wanting to intrude into the privacy of Yudhishthira Maharaj and Draupadi, he still had to go inside that room, because all the weapons, his weapons were kept in a chest in that particular room. So he went, he knocked, and straight away entered into that place, and, you know, he took out his weapons. And he explained the matter to Dharmaraja, why, you know, he has broken the rule. Dharmaraj just gave a bright smile, and Arjuna was on his way. He took that Brahmana in his chariot with his weapons. He soon chased those robbers. The robbers were completely, you know, arrested. All the cows were, you know, restored to that Brahmana. Brahmana was happy. And this way the episode ended. But not for Arjun. After coming back, Arjun said, he went to Yudhishthira Maharaj and he said, as per the agreement, I have to now go, you know, I have to be in exile for 1 year. So I'll go to the forest. Dharmaraj said that, why do you have to do this? You came in just because of some government matter. It was nothing personal. But Arjuna said that you are an advocate of virtue. I similarly also want to adhere to virtue. I want to stick to the rules of the agreement. So I will go out for 1 year. So against the wishes of all the brothers, against the wishes of Draupadi, Arjuna just walked out. He went on a yatra. So he went to different places, sacred places, during his yatra. And then during that yatra, he had several adventures also. He actually, you know, he married Nagakanya Ulupa. Then he married, you know, the daughter of King of Manipur, Chitrangada. Those adventures were there on the way. And then he finally came to Prabhas, as Srila Sukadeva Goswami is saying. Then he came to the outskirts of Dwarka. So as soon as Arjuna arrived there, Krishna is Sarvajna, knows, all cognizant. So immediately Krishna, he came there. He came there to the city to meet his dear friend, and he knew about the exile of Arjuna. He knows everything. Sarvasya Cham Hrudi Sannivishto. He also knew the innermost desire that he wanted to marry Subhadra. But his elder brother Balram was against. He wanted to give his sister's hand to Duryodhan. A difficult situation for Krishna also. So, but Krishna told Arjun that, I understand what is your desire, but you'll have to bide your time. This is not the time, you know, for to take any action. No, there are 4 months of rainy season now. You spend them here. You wear the garb of a Tridandi sannyasi. That's what is mentioned in the verse. Tridanda. Bhutva Tridandi. So you become a Tridandi sannyasi and then spend your time gloriously here. Observe all spiritual and religious practices and you spend here. And he said that he predicted, Krishna predicted, Bhavishyani cha Bhutani, he knows. He predicted that sooner or later, Balramji is going to invite you home for prasad or whatever lunch.
And at that time, you'll be able to meet Subhadra, whom you want to marry. So obviously, the prediction came true. And one day, Lord Balram, you know, actually escorted this sannyasi, actually Arjun, in the garb of sannyasi. And he brought him home and he fed him sumptuously. And actually, the food was being served by none other than Subhadra. So both of them, you know, could, you know, see each other very nicely. A very romantic situation. So they see each other very nicely. Of course, at that time, she did not know that he's Arjun, but she felt attracted to him and vice versa. And actually, Mahabharata describes that it was Subhadra who served Arjun in the form of a sannyasi. Now, it is described in the Bhagavatam that Arjun was enchanted by Subhadra's beauty, and Subhadra also felt attraction for Arjun in the sannyasi vesh. And actually, it is described that Arjuna was Narinam Hrudayam Gamam, very attractive to women. There are some people, handsome people, in modern language, handsome dude. Anyway, so Narinam Hrudayam Gamam. Then she felt attracted to him, and this way it happened. And it is explained in Mahabharata, not in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that one day, in confidence, Krishna spoke to Subhadra. Look at the trouble Krishna takes to see that his devotee Arjuna is happy and his desire is fulfilled. He went and talked to Subhadra. Now he's in the role of a matchmaker, not only peacemaker. So he went and spoke to her and he said that, what do you feel about Duryodhan? He asked casually. Then Subhadra's features, you know, twisted, you know, disdainfully, you know. Duryodhan! And then he said that, how about Arjun? Arjun, you know, who is now in the garb of a sannyasi now. Actually, he is wearing a dress of sannyasi. He wants to marry you. Obviously, her emotions became crystal clear that she was very much attracted to him. And then Krishna cautioned her. He said, for the time being, be quiet. Be, you know, don't try to rush into things. A day will soon dawn when Arjun will marry you. But for the time being, keep a low profile. Because otherwise what will happen? Balramji, you know, will take action, punitive action. So you'll be in trouble. So that way he cautioned his sister Subhadra. And Subhadra, of course, agreed with whatever was said. So when this happened, after some time, Krishna again met Arjun. He told him that every year there is a festival. There is a festival that is being held on the Raivataka mountain. And this particular festival is attended by all Yadus, including Subhadra. So this is your opportunity. You kidnap her. You cannot approach Balram and say, you know, I want the hand of your sister. Because he's already pre-decided what he wants to do. So you kidnap her. Now Krishna is giving suggestion that his sister should be kidnapped. Now, nowadays we read a lot in the newspapers about kidnapping. Sons, they get themselves kidnapped so that they can extract money from parents. No, this is Kali Yuga. But this here Krishna is suggesting that you kidnap Subhadra. So that day dawned when there was a festival on the Raivataka mountain, and all the Yadu clan, including Krishna, Balaram, and all the king, Ungrasen, all Uddhava, all of them, they gathered there, and Subhadra also came there very neatly dressed. And at that time, Krishna gave his chariot to Arjuna, his chariot. So he's really playing the role of a co-conspirator in this. So he gave his chariot, he gave his horses also, two horses, very fast horses. And he said that you come there towards evening time, when everybody is in a relaxed mode, everybody wants to enjoy himself, that is the time you should kidnap her. And Arjuna did that. When the evening came, all of them, Yadus, were, you know, enjoying themselves, sporting and all that. And then Arjuna came there on his chariot with his bow and his arrow. And it is described in the Bhagavatam, just as a lion, you know, snatches an animal amidst other smaller animals, similarly, right in the midst of all the Yadu heroes, Yadu clan, Arjuna just grabbed the hand of Subhadra, picked her up on the chariot, and drove off. Now, what must have been the reaction? The reaction was that all the Yadus became outraged, and especially Balram. Balramji became very, very angry. And because of that anger, he pretty soon convened a meeting. You know, they had a war council kind of thing. And he convened a meeting, and in that Sudharma Hall, the famous Sudharma Hall, and in that meeting, Balramji spoke very, very angrily, very vehemently. He said, "What is this Arjuna has done? He has insulted us. Actually, if he wanted, he could have spoken to us. Of course, if he had spoken, he would not have given. That is another matter. But he said, he should have spoken to us. Why did he not speak? Why, you know, has he snatched away our sister like this? This is serious. This is a serious problem. This can even lead to war between the Yadus and the Pandavas." The Kshatriyas are very, very, you know, in a sense, very passionate. Is it Balramji, when he says that there's going to be war, there could be a war. So it's a very difficult situation. So all the Yadavas supported Balramji. They also roared in anger. He said, "Yes, yes, yes, yes. Must do something about this, you know." And while this roaring was going on in the assembly hall, one person was very, very silent and quiet. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Very peaceful. Very peaceful. And these people said, Balramji said, "Krishna, Arjuna is your dear friend. Don't you think that he has insulted us? Don't you think that this is a war situation? This calls for a war between Yadavas?" So Krishna very calmly, you know, played the role of a peacemaker. He said that, "I don't think that this is an insult to us." He said, "In fact, by kidnapping Subhadra, he has actually elevated us, you know, in the esteem of the society." Totally different point of view. And presented so sweetly that it was impossible for anyone, you know, to reject that point of view. The whole assembly is against, and then Krishna, he speaks so beautifully and so sweetly that the mood of the entire, you know, assembly hall is changed. He said that Arjuna is such a great warrior, and alliance with him is something that we should cherish. And he said, "In fact, Subhadra and Arjuna are very well matched. They're very well matched, very good alliance. So we should look at it positively." In fact, he said that instead of thinking of, you know, punishing Arjuna, we should actually send our messengers very swiftly and, you know, bring them back and have them properly married. Now, look at the suggestions which Krishna is making, and amazingly, Balramji accepted it immediately. So there was peace between the Yadus and the Pandavas. What could have been a very difficult situation, which could have actually gone into a warlike situation, the Lord, you know, by his wonderful, you know, ways, he controlled the situation, and thus, you know, the very difficult situation was, you know, averted. And then Arjuna and Subhadra were brought back, and they were married. And in fact, Balramji sent lot of gifts, gave a lot of gifts. So he became very gracious towards this couple. So this is one particular pastime which I wanted to narrate. The second pastime is when Krishna actually brokered peace between Yudhishthir Maharaj and Arjun. Now you may say that Yudhishthir Maharaj and Arjun, when did they ever have, you know, a quarrel? When did they ever have a fight? In fact, they had a very serious kind of a fight, a very conflicting situation. And this happened on the day Karna was killed in battle. So after Bhishma Pitamaha, Dronacharya and other leaders relinquished their position either due to, you know, death or any other reason, Karna became the commander-in-chief of the Kaurava army. In fact, it was desire that he would not lead the army until these people are not there. So that's what happened. So he became the commander-in-chief of the Kaurava army, and his prowess on the battlefield was unmatched and awesome. He fought with such valor and with such, you know, passion that the entire battlefield presented a ghastly scene with mutilated bodies, blood flowing here and there. So there was a combat in which Yudhishthir Maharaj, he came face to face with Karna. In Mahabharata war, you see this happening. Sometimes, you know, Nakul Sahadev come face to face with the opposition army, or sometimes Arjun comes. But this time, Yudhishthir Maharaj came face to face with Karna, and Yudhishthir Maharaj challenged him. And there was a battle between the two, Dwanda. And though Yudhishthir Maharaj fought very bravely, he was very badly injured. All his weapons were, you know, destroyed by Karna. And Nakula and Sahadev, they rushed to help him. But even them, Karna defeated. All three of them were totally defeated. And Yudhishthir Maharaj was very badly wounded. He was in a very helpless situation. The question may arise, why did Karna not kill Yudhishthir Maharaj at that point in time? Karna did not kill Yudhishthir Maharaj because he had given a promise to Kunti Devi, his mother, that if at all he would kill one of the Pandavas, that would be Arjun. So he had identified Arjun as his, you know, victim. So therefore, Yudhishthir Maharaj was, you know, let loose. He was very badly injured. And then he asked Nakula and Sahadev to take him back to the tent so that his wounds could be treated. Yudhishthir Maharaj did not feel so bad about the wounds, which are very serious. But he felt bad. He felt humiliated because Karna had not killed him. Just left him. No? His self-respect, you know, was hurt very badly. So he came back to the tent. He was lying on a bed. Then he was treated by very expert, you know, physicians. They were treating his wounds. In the meantime, Arjun and Krishna. Krishna was, you know, driving the chariot of Arjun. That chariot came. It came in the vicinity where Karna, you know, was fighting so valiantly. And at that particular juncture, it's a very detailed account. I'm just giving a brief version. At that point in time, what happened was that Karna used his Bhargava weapon. And from that, thousands of arrows came and the Pandava army was routed completely. They were running here and there and they were crying out helplessly. They were pleading with Arjun and Krishna, please do something, otherwise this Karna, you know, the putra of Radheya, this Radheya is going to destroy our army. So please do something, please do something. This was their entreaty. They were time and again requesting. At that time, Arjun said to Krishna, he said, see what devastation this hero is causing to our army. With his Bhargava weapon, he has destroyed so many soldiers. So it seems as though the time has come for us to meet in combat. That means Arjuna and Karna to meet in combat. And now it is the one of us has to die in this. That time seems to have now arrived. Krishna heard Arjuna's statement. But then he steered the chariot away from where Karna was fighting. Krishna's plans, nobody knows. So he steered the chariot away from that place. And he took it and he actually saved Arjuna from all the arrows that Karna was shooting. And then he suggested to Arjun that let us go and see your brother, Yudhishthir Maharaj, who is very badly hurt. You can go and meet him and then you can again come back. And then, you know, you take care of Karna, you can kill him. But right now, let us go to the place where Yudhishthir Maharaj is lying. Maybe he's met with death also, we don't know. Let us go. Then Arjuna asked Krishna to take the chariot to the place where Bhima was fighting with Karna. So Bhima said also that, yeah, you better go and see because we are not sure whether Yudhishthira Maharaj is still living after the injuries that he has received. Meantime, I will take care of the situation here. So you go. So Arjuna and Krishna then went to the Pandava camp, the tent where Yudhishthira Maharaj was laying helplessly and is being treated by different, you know, physicians for his wounds. So when Arjuna went inside the tent, he offered his obeisances. He offered his prostrated obeisances to Yudhishthira Maharaj. And as he rose, Yudhishthira Maharaj, he told Yudhishthira Maharaj, looked at Arjun, and somehow or the other, he assumed that Arjun had come to the tent after killing Karna. That he had come there after killing Karna. So, this Arjun also was relieved that his elder brother is not killed. After all, he is resting and soon he'll be all right. So, at that time, Yudhishthira Maharaj made a statement. He said, "O Achyuta, O Arjuna, Karna and I fought, but he reduced me to this particular condition and I was completely vanquished by him. I was allowed to live. Alas, I was allowed to live." He's burning with that humiliation that he was not killed. Kshatriya likes to die rather than face humiliation. He said that, "I am still alive." But he said, "I am somewhat relieved because Arjuna has killed Karna and come here." Now, Arjuna had not killed Karna at that point in time. That was the problem. So he said that, "I'm so happy now that you have taken care of this Karna. For 13 years when we were in the forest, I was always thinking of how this Karna can be killed. And today you have accomplished the job." That's how Yudhishthira Maharaj said. Now Arjuna, when he heard this statement, he was really stunned. He took a very deep breath and he said, "O king, you are not aware of the facts." He had to state the truth. He said, "You are not aware of the facts. So I had to fight with Ashwatthama and defeat him. I had to fight with hordes of warriors. And after having fought with them, I have come here to meet you to find out your welfare. I have not killed Karna so far. I have just come to find out how you are feeling." When Yudhishthira Maharaj heard this statement from Arjun, suddenly he became outraged. He became furious. His eyes became red. And in great anger, he was virtually like a fit of anger. They say, sometimes we say, "I had a fit of anger," like that, like a seizure. He was seized by anger and he shook his head and then he said to Arjun something very, very hurting. He said, "Your birth in Kunti's womb was in vain. How could you leave the battlefield without killing Karna? You possess all the ability to slay Karna, but yet out of fear, you have run away from him. So, you are coming here is just an excuse to run away from Karna." Now, how do you think Arjuna could take this insult? A Kshatriya warrior who was so, proud of his Gandiva, was so fond of his, bravery. When he heard these words, Arjuna was simply dumbfounded. First of all, Yudhishthira Maharaj was never given to anger. It was very difficult to make him angry. But somehow or the other, by quirk of destiny or by the will of the Supreme Lord, he was seized by anger and he made such acidic comments to Arjun that Arjuna felt very hurt. And then he said something else which hurt him even more. Yudhishthira Maharaj said that instead of, you are handling the Gandiva, you should have driven the chariot and given your Gandiva bow to Keshava, Krishna, and he would have killed Karna. And then he said something which was even more insulting to Arjuna. He said that you should give your Gandiva bow to a superior king who is capable of, using it and killing Karna. So the last statement was the one which provoked Arjuna maximum. Why? Because Arjuna had taken a vow, secret vow, that anyone who asks me to hand over my Gandiva to another person, I'll kill that person. So now comes the dilemma. So Arjuna, when he heard this statement from Yudhishthira Maharaj, his hand immediately went, you know, to his sword. It was gleaming, you know, steel. He just took out the sword. And he went, he wanted to use it immediately, implement it immediately. So Krishna, the peacemaker, his dear friend, Sakha, he immediately stopped him. He came in between, you know, Arjun and Yudhishthira Maharaj. And he stopped him. He said, what are you doing? He said that you have to go and fight, you have to go to the battlefront and fight and, you know, kill maybe Karna or maybe kill the sons of, you know, Dhritarashtra. Why are you using your weapon on your worshipable elder brother? What you're doing is totally wrong. It is against the tenets of scripture. And then Krishna speaks so many words from scripture by which Krishna, Arjun's anger, you know, was somewhat abated. So he put back his, you know, sword into the scabbard. And then he looked at, he was still glaring at Yudhishthira Maharaj, because his vow had to be kept. And then he looked at Krishna and said, Krishna, he said that, all this is all right. I understand that it was wrong on my part to even try, you know, assault my elder brother. But what about my vow? I have taken a vow, and Kshatriyas are supposed to abide by their vows. If I don't keep this vow, people will have no faith in my other vows. So I have to keep this vow. So I have to kill him. How do you solve the dilemma? You know, the Supreme Lord Krishna, he always has a solution for all problems. He had a solution for this problem. So he suggested, he said that you can do one thing. You can insult your elder brother. You insult Yudhishthira Maharaj. And insulting somebody who is worthy of respect, that is as good as death. So when you insult him, it is as good as you are killing him. And Krishna said that. Go, start acting. And Arjuna had no heart. He had such love for his elder brother, such intense love. He would die to, you know, do carry out the order of Yudhishthira Maharaj. But this was a very difficult situation. He couldn't have killed his elder brother to keep his vow. So therefore, when Krishna said that you insult him, he did that. He insulted him in a very, very provocative way. He said that, he told Yudhishthira Maharaj, he said that it's a fact. You are unfit to rule. You don't deserve to be the king. And actually Bhima should be the ruler, you know, after him. No, he has got that. Bhima should rule. You're not fit. And you are a gambler. You gambled and, you know, lost the kingdom. What have you done? You achieved nothing. This way, you know, he used provocative words. And as he was speaking, you know, he was speaking words which were half true in one sense, if you look at it. But at the same time, he was insulting his brother so much that Yudhishthira Maharaj's, you know, face fell down. You know, he was looking down. Because he was taking it seriously. He did not know that Krishna has instructed him to speak like this. Difficult, very. One can stage a drama on this. So, you know, he went on. And Yudhishthira Maharaj, you know, became very quiet. He started looking down. Then Krishna told him, now that you have insulted him, go and beg forgiveness, touch his feet. So Arjuna goes and, you know, falls prostrate, holds the feet of Yudhishthira Maharaj and says, please forgive me. And at that time, Yudhishthira Maharaj feels very bad about it. He says that, Arjun, whatever comments you passed on to me, they are correct. It is true that I am unfit to rule. So, you know, he took it upon himself that, you know, whatever Arjuna had said was all true. And, you know, very sensitive. So he said, yes, you are right. I am not unfit to be a king. I don't have any good qualities. He said that. Meantime, Arjuna was, you know, boiling within. He said that, he told Krishna that I have committed an abominable sin of wanting to kill my elder brother, who is Dharmaraj. He is the emblem of all virtue. And, you know, I dare to kill him. So he took out his sword and he wanted to kill himself. Now Krishna had difficult time. Krishna went and, you know, stopped Arjun now. He said, on one, you know, first you wanted to kill your brother, now you want to kill yourself. He said, what is this nonsense going on? Huh? You shouldn't do this. We should not do that. Then said, but what do I do now? I have committed a sin already. How do I atone for it? Then Krishna came out with another solution. Very brilliant solution. He told Arjun that you start praising yourself. So when a valiant hero, you know, praises himself, it is as good as committing suicide. So Arjuna started praising himself before Yudhishthira Maharaj. Such a thing had never happened in past. Na bhuto na bhavishyati kind of situation. But he started praising himself to the skies. I am this, I am that, I have done this, I have achieved this. No, went on. And then again he fell down at the feet of Yudhishthira Maharaj, held his feet tightly, and he said, please forgive me for whatever has happened. No, I love you very much, I respect you very much. And now, please bless that I go to the, you know, war front. Please bless that, you know, I will become successful. Give me your blessing. Only with your blessing can I defeat Karna. On my own valor, I cannot defeat him. So please bless me. So now, Yudhishthira Maharaj blessed Arjuna. And then Krishna and Arjuna rode, you know, they rode the, you know, chariot and went back. And then subsequently, Karna was killed. So this is the second episode where there was a conflicting, you know, situation between Dharmaraj, Yudhishthira Maharaj, and Arjun, which Krishna helped to solve in his very inimitable way. Then I come to the third pastime, that is disagreement on how Ashwatthama is to be punished. So this is again in Mahabharata, as well as it is in the first canto, 7th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. So when Duryodhan, you know, was incapacitated by Bhimsen in the combat, with the maces, Bhimsen hit him on the thigh. His thigh was broken, his spine was injured, and he lay on the battlefield just waiting for death to overtake him. All his sins had visited him, all the torture that he had given to the Pandavas, all that, you know, he had to atone in this particular way. So he was lying on the bed. He was lying on the battlefield waiting for death to overtake him. So just at that time, Ashwatthama, the son of Dronacharya, he came there with Kripacharya and Krutavarma. Krutavarman. All three of them, they came there in their chariots. And they came to the spot where Duryodhana, you know, was helplessly lying. He was helplessly lying there. And when Ashwatthama saw Duryodhana's condition, he flared up in rage. He became very, very angry. And then he said that my father, Dronacharya, was slain, you know, by these vile, you know, Pandavas. Using, you know, all kinds of wrong methods, unethical way, they killed him. So actually that did not cause so much anger in my heart. But seeing your condition, O king, I cannot tolerate it. So he said that right today, I will go and kill all the Pandava army. Now the war is practically over with Duryodhana, you know, dying. The war was over, more or less. But Ashwatthama wanted to continue it in his own way. Though son of a Dronacharya, he was not actually, Bhagavatam refers to him as Brahma Bandhu. Not actually a Brahmana, because his attitude was not Brahmanical. So he said that, I'll go and kill everyone. I'll atone for everything that they have done to you. So the dying, you know, Duryodhan anointed him as the commander-in-chief. So after that, Ashwatthama, then Krupacharya, and then this Kritavarman, all three of them, they rode their chariots and they went to the Kaurava camp, just near the Kaurava camp. And outside the Kaurava camp, there was a banyan tree. It was becoming dark. In fact, darkness had enveloped the entire battlefield. And they went there and they, you know, loosened the horses from the chariots, and all of three of them lay down just to take rest. They were all tired. Krupacharya and Krutavarman immediately fell asleep. But no sleep for Ashwatthama. Because he had that, he was wanting to somehow or the other come out with a plan in which he could kill all the Pandavas. He was restless. So sitting there, just then he happened to see, he looked up, he happened to see that there were several crows resting, you know, they were relaxing on the tree. And an owl came there in the night and attacked the crows and killed them. When he saw that, Ashwatthama said, "Ha, here is a plan which I can execute. Because on my own, I cannot fight with these Pandavas. They are too brave. I am alone. But I can execute this plan. I can go and kill them during the night against all the dictates and against all the tenets of war. I'll go and do that." So he went and revealed his plan to Krupacharya. Krupacharya told him, "This is stupid. Duryodhana, you know, by his wicked plans, he brought destruction upon himself and the Kauravas. He did not follow the advice of Bhishma Pitamaha. He did not follow the advice of Dronacharya, Vidura, and myself. And he has come to grief. And now you want to do something similar? This is unethical. Don't do it. You are not to kill anybody." But then Ashwatthama was a stubborn character. Very stubborn. He didn't listen to the advice. He just climbed up the chariot in the dead of night and he stirred out and he started going towards the Pandava camp. Reluctantly, Krupacharya and Krutavarman also followed him. So Ashwatthama went inside the tent where he saw Drushtadyumna, the killer of, you know, Bhishma Pitamaha, Shikhandi, and he saw Drushtadyumna. He was just fast asleep. He woke him up from the sleep and killed him, slashed his neck. Similarly, you know, he killed all the soldiers who were all sleeping. All of them who came to oppose him, he killed all of them. Then he went to a tent. He saw five people, you know, sleeping on the ground. And he killed all of them ruthlessly, thinking that they were the five Pandavas. Actually, they were not the five Pandavas. They were the five sons of Draupadi. So he killed all of them. And then Shikhandi engaged him in combat. He killed Shikhandi as well. He was in that ruthless, violent, murderous mood. So he killed everyone. Practically everyone, he killed them. And then he strode out. Only one who survived the massacre was the chariot driver of Drushtadyumna. Drushtadyumna ran to Yudhishthira Maharaj and he narrated to him that this is what has happened. This wretch, you know, of Ashwatthama has killed Draupadi's sons, all of them. And then in a false act of bravado, Ashwatthama severed the heads of the five sons of, he didn't know that there were five sons of, you know, Draupadi, but he severed their heads and he took all the five heads to Duryodhan to give them, you know, show them, you know, to Duryodhan and, you know, please him. He thought he had good news, you know, for dying Duryodhan. So he went with those five heads there and he said, "Here are the heads of the five Pandavas, you know, I killed them," you know, boastfully he said. Duryodhana just felt, even in the dying state, he felt the heads of the five sons. He said, "These are not Pandavas. You have killed the sons of Draupadi." He was not happy. In fact, he said, "It is Juguspita karma." He said that this karma of yours is something which is to be hated. You have done something heinous, which is very, very wrong. Now there is no heir left for the Kuru dynasty. So saying this, Duryodhana left his body. He died at that point in time. So Ashwatthama thought that he's going to make his king, dying king, happy. But he died very, very unhappy. He was not happy with whatever Ashwatthama had done. Then Ashwatthama just left that place. So meantime, here, the Drushtadyumna's charioteer, he went and reported the matter to, Yudhishthira Maharaj, who fainted when Draupadi came to know, she fainted, she became unconscious, she was laying there, she was in tears, and Arjun, you know, tried to console her. He said that, don't worry, I will get the head of this Ashwatthama, let him be anywhere, I'll chase him, I'll get the head of this Ashwatthama, and then, you know, I'll come and present that head to you. Then, you know, after the, you know, the cremation ceremonies are performed for our five sons, you know, then you can stand on the head of, you know, on this head of Ashwatthama, and then, you know, you can bathe. That way he tried to, you know, assuage the grief of Draupadi. In the meantime, they said that now it means, you know, Ashwatthama has to be captured. Krishna, as usual, cautioned Arjun. He said that don't take Ashwatthama very lightly. He said that he's a ruthless character who can go to any length he wants. And he said that just as you received the Brahmastra Vidya from Dronacharya, similarly he compelled Dronacharya, because of his father, he compelled him also to give this Brahmastra Vidya to him. And he's unscrupulous. He doesn't know how to do it. Now, the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam go into elaborate details describing this particular pastime. We have no time to discuss all that. So, anyway, Krishna and Arjun gave a chase to Ashwatthama. They ran after him. Bhima also, all three of them ran. And they chased after him. And Ashwatthama saw them coming. He was terrorized, feeling very, very insecure. And then he tried to use the Brahmastra on Arjuna. Then Krishna, by Krishna's guidance, which was eternally there, available to the Pandavas, that particular Brahmastra was neutralized. Then Ashwatthama also tried to kill Parikshit Maharaj in the womb of his mother Uttara. Even that, the Supreme Lord in his compassion neutralized, protected the womb. That is how Parikshit Maharaj came into the world. That is how heard Srimad Bhagavatam. That is how we can talk about it. So he did that also. And then Arjuna, with his weapons, he sent a weapon by which he bound Ashwatthama with ropes. They captured him. And then Krishna said, kill this aggressor. He said, he's not a Brahmana. He's, you know, actually, he's the son of your, you know, preceptor. But still, you kill him. He's an aggressor. He has killed innocent, you know, sons when they're sleeping. So you have every right to kill them. But Arjuna was reluctant. He said, that is my guru's son, so I don't want to kill him. So he just bound him. And he said that I'll take him to Yudhishthira Maharaj and Draupadi. Maybe they will be able to decide what to do. And thus, he took Ashwatthama like an animal. He was bound by ropes. He dragged him to Draupadi and told Draupadi, here is this Ashwatthama, the killer of your sons. Now do what you want with him. What do you want to be done with him? Draupadi, though she had been, you know, her five sons were killed ruthlessly, brutally by Ashwatthama, when she saw Ashwatthama, the Brahmana, sitting there with his head down, he had nothing to be proud of anymore. So he sat, he was looking down, cast down. Draupadi, her compassion came to the fore, and her Aryan culture came to the fore. So this is the beauty of our Vedic culture. So when she saw Ashwatthama in that condition, she said to Arjun, don't kill him. Don't kill him. She said that he is the son of our guru. He is the son of your preceptor, Dronacharya. And when Dronacharya died, Kripi, she did not, you know, perform sati. She did not go on the funeral pyre because her son was still living. So he said that Dronacharya is living through his son Ashwatthama, and we have no right to kill him. So very high sentiments from a person who had been hurt so grievously, but still she had those views. And when Yudhishthira Maharaj heard these views from Draupadi, he said, excellent, excellent. What you have spoken is directly from the scriptures, Vedic scriptures. So I agree with you totally. Then Nakul Sahadev also said, all right, agreed with them. And then the Lord also agreed. So it seemed everybody agreed. But there was one voice of dissent. You can imagine who it was. Bhima. Bhima was very, very angry. He came there in a very menacing way. He came. He said, this Ashwatthama needs no mercy. He has ruthlessly killed, you know, young children while they are asleep. So he needs to be handled the same way. He needs to be killed. So he actually came there. And in a very menacing way, he came towards Ashwatthama. So when he came towards Ashwatthama, Draupadi intervened. So she stood between Ashwatthama and Bhima, like a, you know, shield. Now, Krishna had a very tough time. So it is described in the Bhagavatam that he used his, you know, Chaturbhuja form to, you know, keep Draupadi at bay and also Bhima, you know, separated. It's like, you know, sometimes fights take place and a third party goes and separates the two, like that. That kind of a situation. Unusual. Bhima loved Draupadi so much, and he would always carry out whatever Draupadi's slightest wish he would carry out. Among the husbands, he was the one who was most cooperative. If he liked the smell of one flower, you know, he would go, you know, miles to get that flower. That is Bhima. But here, you know, he was very much disturbed because Draupadi wanted Ashwatthama to be pardoned. Very tense situation. So Krishna then defended both. And then he instructed Arjuna as Paramatma in the heart of Arjuna. He said that this is Brahma Bandhu, is not a Brahmana, and he is an aggressor, therefore he should be killed. Now Draupadi, Yudhishthir Maharaj, Nakul, Sahadev, they don't want him to be killed. You also feel that he need not be killed. On the other hand, Bhima Sen, he wants him to be killed. And I also felt like that, he should be killed. So, now you find a solution, Arjuna, which will solve all the problems. Now this is the characteristics of the Supreme Lord. Though he may create problems for the devotee, he suggests solutions which solve all the conflicts. All conflicts end there. So he came with that. Then Arjuna, inspired by the Lord's very, very equivocal instructions. They were not definitive. He did not say you do this or you do that. But he inspired Arjuna from within. Then Arjuna actually caught hold of the top knot of Ashwatthama's hair, where he had got a beautiful jewel tied to that, which was actually the source of all his mystic powers. He took that, he severed with the razor, he severed that, took out the, you know, that jewel. He presented it to Draupadi, and then he said that I have killed Ashwatthama, yet not killed him. He said, insulting a warrior like this by cutting his hair is as good as killing him. So I have killed him, and yet not killed him. And then this way, Ashwatthama, you know, he was humiliated, and then Krishna cursed him. He said, for the type of sins that you have committed, you wander alone for thousands of years, some 3,000 years. He said that Ashwatthama is still, you know, alive. I don't know what plans he's making. Anyway, so he's there. He's playing. So this way, a possible conflict between Bhima and Draupadi was also avoided by the Supreme Lord Krishna. So thus, Krishna always establishes peace. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead was at hand, was available to the Pandavas. He could directly influence, directly help, directly cooperate in the problems of stress and strain which the Pandavas faced. So we may say that we are not so fortunate when we have stress and strain. We also, you know, have our battle going on, our wanting to, you know, fight these material tendencies and our wanting to be Krishna conscious. Constant fight is going on. But the Supreme Lord Krishna is available to us in the form of his holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So we are no less fortunate than the Pandavas. By mercy of Srila Prabhupada, by mercy of our spiritual master, we are in a moment where we can be connected to Krishna. And as the verse that we read earlier states, that being connected to Krishna means you can be peaceful. And being peaceful means you can be happy in this life. So in year 1966, Srila Prabhupada, he had just come to America. At that time, he came out, he actually issued a leaflet, which was amongst his very first of his publications. And this he brought out when he was still in the storefront, he brought out that leaflet. And it was, that leaflet was distributed in the streets of New York, then it was distributed everywhere, San Francisco, Montreal, and other cities. And this leaflet was entitled Peace Formula, Prabhupada's Peace Formula. You can read this, it's a two-page document. It is there in Science of Self-Realization. It is given there, Peace Formula. But entitled the Peace Formula, is reproduced in SSR, and the gist is, I'll just read an extract from that. Therefore, if you want peace at all, you will have to change your consciousness into Krishna consciousness, both individually and collectively, by the simple process of chanting the holy names of God. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. This is a standard and recognized process for achieving peace in this world. We therefore recommend that everyone becomes Krishna conscious by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, thank you very much. I think I have exceeded the time. So. Obviously all of you know this topic, so there will be no questions. Very well. Can I have Kirtan?